Lenny Clark is a legendary stand-up comedian, actor, and humanitarian. On the acting side of things, you can currently see him on NBC on Tuesday nights in Extended Family, a show for which Lenny is receiving rave reviews. On the stand-up side, he is going to be headlining at Joe Rogan's Comedy Mothership this weekend in the Fat Man Room. Shows on Friday, February 2nd through Sunday the 4th. There are limited tickets remaining for the late shows on Friday, Saturday, as well as the 8 p.m. show on Sunday. Those will be gone by the weekend. So if you're listening or watching right now, go to comedymothership.com to snag those if you can. Lenny, thank you so much for the time. How you doing today?
Trey, a lot better now talking to you, pal.
Great to hear. And I'm excited to have you here in Austin this weekend. You're performing at the Comedy Mothership. The Mothership has been described much like a club that you're very familiar with from over the years, the Ding Ho, back in Boston, as a club that is run by a comedian for comedians. What does that concept mean for you as someone who has been so successful at another club like that?
You know what? Whenever you hear a club run by a comedian for other comedians, you feel great, because that comedian, especially in Joe's case, has gone out of the way to make sure everything is perfect. The lights, the sounds, the audiences, the security, you know, because, I mean, unfortunately now, You do need security sometimes when you're doing shows. I mean, I've been doing almost 50 years, and I never felt the need for security, but I do now, because people, you know, just, I don't know, they feel good about, they feel more, they never come up on stage on me in the beginning. I'd take a chair or something. But now, you know, people don't understand that they're coming to see live entertainment. And, you know, I need to focus on what I'm doing, because I'm really write. I write as I perform. I mean, I go with what the audience gives me. And I mean, I love the fact that everyone I talk to about Joe's Club says it's the best they've ever worked. And I'm not surprised, because if Joe does something, he does it first class.
Yeah, I can't speak to other clubs around the country, but I feel like here in Austin, people are starting to understand comedy club etiquette again, because that was something that was maybe an unwritten rule for a long time. But over the last few years, and largely in response to COVID and just how oppressed things were during the COVID era, we've seen a resurgence and an explosion in the popularity of comedy. With that, though, comes a lot of people who are new to the art form, and a lot more people who are easily offended too, who probably don't belong in a comedy club. But it's good to remind people that the show is about the person standing on stage performing art, because that's what stand-up is. It's your responsibility to act in kind. That's not to scream stuff out randomly. That is to laugh when you need to laugh, clap when you need to clap, and otherwise be quiet and let the show happen. For the person who's doing it on stage, for the people who are sitting around you who you are going to be disturbing as well. But in this era of social media and crowd work clips, because a lot of comics don't want to burn material on social media, they want to save it for that next special. There are a lot of people who are coming to shows who think that they should be a part of the show as well, but that's not the case. And it sucks to hear that for a guy like you, someone who has, you know, established himself like you have over the years, that you're having to deal with knuckleheads who are maybe trying to get on stage here and there.
I have had hecklers my entire life, and I've never had trouble putting them down, because in the beginning I was so nervous. If someone heckled me, like a good comic friend of mine, Don Gavin, says, Lenny, you could have took care of that guy with a 25 caliber pistol, and yet you brought out a howitzer. It was only because I was a wreck, because I don't know what I'm going to do next, and I got to get them out of the way. I appreciate when the crowds listen, and like you said, a lot of comedians don't want the material out there because they want to have a special. Some of these guys have 16 specials. You know, I remember what I did last week. You know, I just go out and I go. You know, I think I had a special once, but, you know, they wanted me to be clean. Anyway, I just really like creating on the fly, and to be able to work a club like Joe's, you know, the Mothership. I mean, I've been working dive bars, grain and food stores. I mean, I've been in bars where the only people not heckling me were passed out, you know? So, I mean, it's, I've been doing this a long, long time, and I do every show like it's my last one, because one of these nights I'm going to be right. But I still love it when you get a great crowd and they're listening and you can create right there in front of them. That's what it's all about. You know, it's like therapy for me, you know?
So a lot of the creative process for you then is actually being on stage. And then what, when you're walking off stage, are you trying to recall a special moment, or are you recording sometimes to try and capture those moments once again?
You know, in the beginning, when I started, there was only maybe 100 comedians working the whole country. I mean, everyone, including the big guys, you know, the stars, the giants that we followed on their shoulders. And now there's probably only 100 people who aren't comedians. Everybody's a fucking comedian. Everyone's got a stand up. Everyone's got a show, podcast. I mean, like Joe's podcast, he asked me to do it early on. And I said, "Well, Joe, you know, I'm kind of busy." And he was nice. And he said, "Lenny, why don't you do my podcast?" I said, "Gee, Joe, I'm filming something." And then the third time he asked me, he says, "Lenny, why don't you do my podcast?" I said, "Joe, I got to be honest with you. I don't know what a podcast is." He says, "You idiot." He says, "Get out of here." So we went out to LA and did the podcast. My God, doing Joe Rogan's podcast, to me, a guy who's been in comedy almost 50 years now, it's like doing the Tonight Show 30 years ago. More people have seen me on Joe Rogan's podcast than they've seen me in my entire career. It's insane. I mean, and he's been so good to me. I mean, you know, when I was coming up, I figured there were a lot of people to help me, you know, because they were already established and they were big stars. And I said, if I ever get into a position of power at all, I'm going to help the young guys and girls. And I did that. And a lot of these people I helped are superstars now. I mean, multi-millionaires, and good for them. Because I didn't do it for any other reason other than I thought when one of us gets in, we kick the door in, we all run in, everyone gets a job. It didn't work out like that. But Joe's been great. Joe's always, you know, offered me, you know, to do a show and, you know, anything I needed. He's just been there, you know. The only thing I'd ask you, Joe, is to put me together with Elon Musk so I could go up in a spaceship. That's all I want. That's all I want. I don't want money. I don't want, you know, and I'm really thrilled about coming down to work this club.
You know, hearing people talk about you, Lenny, two things come to mind more than anything else. One is you're usually the funniest guy in the room, but the other element, and the one you probably care a little bit more about, is that you have a huge heart. Like, you truly do care about people. Where does that come from for you? Is that something that was instilled by your parents in your childhood, or where does that come from?
It really is. And the fact that you just said those two comments, I'm very flattered. And it means the world to me, because I'm not the funniest guy in the world. I am not the funniest guy in the world, but I want to be a favorite. You know what I mean? That was my niche. You know what I mean? And I mean, I did some stuff that was pretty crazy. I did stuff I can't believe. I did stuff I'm still trying to suppress. However, my mother always told me when I was starting, she said, "Leonard, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice." And that's why I try to treat everybody with respect. And if when I watch other comedians, you know, if they make me laugh, I laugh like hell. And if they don't laugh, if they don't make me laugh, I just go, "Yeah, okay, okay." You know, I mean, I'm no judge. There are no robes on me, but I do value my reputation as being pretty funny, but I really value my reputation as being a good guy. And the big heart thing, that means the world to me, because I did, when I started to get a modicum of success and celebrity status, I used it for good, for like charities, right? I've done tons of charities. I do so many charities, you wouldn't believe it. And I did it because it's what made my mom and dad happy. They said, "That was nice how you raised money for that children's hospital. That was nice how you helped that guy out who lost his wife." You know, look, I'll help anybody I can, But I mean, don't call me up and say your cousin's goldfish died and you want to get a GoFundMe thing and have a little comedy. I mean, people are out of their mind. But if I can help someone, I will. And another thing, when people have offered me help, I've said, yeah, sure. You know, I mean, look, no one owes me anything. You know, this all started as a joke. I didn't know I was going to be a comedian. I didn't know I was going to be in movies and TV. My family was poor. You know, we grew up in a very poor section of Cambridge. And then my father, I don't know, I think he won the house in a card game. We moved into a beautiful neighborhood and the only scum there was us, you know? And it was pretty wild growing up in a beautiful neighborhood. But my parents, they instilled in me a good work ethic. And they also said, you know, treat everybody nice, you know, try to be nice to everybody.
Considering the encouragement that you've given so many young comedians over the years, which was a response to not really receiving a ton of that early in your career, was there any one comedian early in your career that did kind of help pick you up when you were trying to figure things out and allowed you a sort of motivation to continue plowing forward in the world of comedy?
There was a few. Richard Belza, he was, I'll never forget, I did a show in New York, you know, because in Boston, we didn't have comedy. So I have to get on the train and go to New York and hang around and wait to get on. And I was the only guy from Boston, you know, this way back, Catch a Rising Star, comic strip, improv. And Richard Belzer like told me one night, he says, look, babe, you got something. I don't know what it is, but you got something. Keep coming back. And Joe Piscopo, when I worked at the improv, he encouraged me to come back. And of course, Jay Leno let me open for him. You know, we did the Leno and Clark expedition. And I learned a lot by just being around him. You know, I didn't get to do the Tonight Show much. I think I only got to do it once with him. But he was very good. Arsenio Hall, he was really nice to me. Rodney Dangerfield was great to me. George Carlin. Richard Pryor was encouraging to me. You know, I mean, I'm talking about from, you know, the giants of the business. When I was a kid doing stand-up, there was one book. It was called The Last Laugh. And I wasn't even a big book reader, but I remember reading that book, you know, wanted to know more about comedy. And then every comedian that I saw, I wanted to know, I wanted to meet. The first one I ever saw was Shecky Green. I think I was 17 years old in Las Vegas. And I didn't even say, wow, I want to do that. I said, wow, this guy's doing something I can't believe. And then I just got hooked, you know, I started doing gong shows, you know, in local bar rooms, and I was winning. And I mean, I struggled. I struggled for years and years and years, but I wouldn't quit. I wouldn't give up. And people started to come to see me. And then other people came through and I encouraged them, you know, because I like, if I see someone who's got a little something, they got a spark, it reminds me of how I was when I was just out there floating alone. I didn't even know what I was doing. And when you said tape yourself, in one of these books I read about Lenny Bruce, he used to tape himself and listen for hours. I didn't realize he was listening to his performances. This is how stupid I was. I'd be in a room with a tape recorder. Go, all right, well, what do you do now? And then I had all these tapes. I had thousands of tapes in shoeboxes everywhere, but I never listened to them. I would tape every performance I ever did, but I would never listen to them. And people go, you know what? That was pretty funny, Lenny, what you did the other night. And then sometimes they'd say, see that new kid? You see, that's your bit. And I go, really? I go, yeah, I didn't even remember. I would just get up there and just go. And if I was starting a bomb, it'd be louder, faster, funnier. I mean, I was a wreck. And to this day, I'm still nervous before I go on stage every time, whether it's 20 people, 20,000. I'm still a wreck because I can't believe that I am lucky enough that God gave me talent to make people laugh, you know? And I do make people laugh, but I think that a lot of that has to do with me being insane. I really feel I'm insane. And most people that will know me, you know, know me for 40, 50 years, they'll tell you, oh, he's insane. I mean, I got a good heart, and there's not a moment It's just bone in my body, you know, and I'm not out to, and I'm not out to slam anybody. Look, I'm just still banging around after all these years.
Well, the important thing is you figured out some constructive ways to help the insanity out, if you will. You called getting on stage a sort of therapy. So I know a lot of people in radio who think of themselves in very similar fashions, but it's like, look, you've figured out a way to make it work in this world versus being somebody who is having conversations with himself on a street corner, which may also happen too, but you can just tell people that you're coming up with new bits on the spot.
When I was starting out and starting to get a name for myself and selling out shows at the Ding Ho, we had Harvard students, MIT, Northeastern, BC, BU, all a real college group of people that would come by themselves, you know, they'd get their buddies and they go, you got to see this guy, he's nuts. And then we started the open mic and then some of them would try it. And all the people that made it, there were thousands that just did it once and one and done. They just couldn't deal with the, and the crowds became so used to getting good comedy. Like they would say, you suck tonight. You know, say you ain't got it tonight, Letty, you blow. You know, I mean, they were very, very, very hard on me because I did it every week. I did it every week and I'd have my most fun part was having an open mic night. It was Wednesday nights. And I would put on sometimes 45, 50 people a night. And the bar closed at one, but we just turn off the lights outside and we keep going. Everyone got on. And my whole thing was, if you were a newcomer, you got right away. You know, sometimes comics come in to a club and naturally they're big, big stars and they want to come in and it's good for the club. It's good for them, but you don't want to take away from the youngsters, you know, or the new people, because that may be their only chance in a lifetime, you know, so you don't want to crash. So if you came in, I'd put you on, but I'd say, do 10, you know, don't, you know, I still got a bunch of people to go. And it would give me time to smoke a joint or do a line or something. I was very crazy.
So you have performed in Austin one other time prior to this weekend at the Comedy Mothership, and it was under classic Lenny Clark circumstances, I guess. What was the one other time that you performed stand-up in this town many, many years ago?
I've been traveling with Kennison, and we met in New York. I went to see him. You know, that was the thing, Trey. When I hear there'd be a great comic, like a great comic in Pittsburgh or a great comic in Chicago, I would go to that town to meet those people. And Kennison happened to be in New York, so I took the train down to New York, and I met him. And then we rekindled our friendship in Los Angeles. And then I brought him to Boston, of course. And then he became a giant superstar. But so we're out in LA and Sam says, hey, man, the club that I started at in Austin is going under. And we all want to go back. So I said, okay. So some of them were driving. I said, man, that's a long, I'll fly. So I flew in, and it was wild because when I was with Sam, you know, I'm not blaming Sam. I was just as bad. We would partake in booze and drugs and women. And it was the first time I ever did ecstasy. So they said to Sam, hey, Sam, I got this new stuff. It's called ecstasy. He goes, how much is that? He goes, I don't know, 10, 15 bucks. He says, give it all to me. He bought it all. So we're all doing ecstasy. And it was one point where we're sitting around talking. And I saw Sam start to float away. And I remember pulling him back down to earth. And someone says, why are you touching Sam? I said, what do you mean? He goes, he says, Lenny, thank you for bringing me back. I mean, it was so wild. We did the show. And it was a blast. And I loved the town of Austin, you know. And I think I mentioned to you before we came on that I had opened for Kinky Freeman, the Texas Jew Boys. And he was really great. And I later ended up doing two TV shows with him. And he gave me a card. This man is allowed to be on the grounds of my property. You know, don't shoot him or something. Pretty cool. But I liked him. So I like Texas anyway. But I love Austin. It's just got a great vibe. And now it's the comedy hotbed. Let's face it. Everyone knows Austin, Texas, because of the mothership, is the new comedy hotbed in the country, you know.
It really is. And it's interesting, too, because Joe has talked about this on his podcast that he wanted a place for comedians where you weren't having to sweat a lot of the other stuff in entertainment. Like out in L.A., you do stand-up comedy, and there are a lot of people who are committed to stand-up comedy, but the goal for a long time was getting that TV deal. And New York is a little bit less that. It's a little bit more comedy-centric, but you're also having to fight with the city a lot at times. Boston's a great stand-up place. It's been a stand-up mecca for a long time. Dingho, I mean, in terms of underrated clubs in this country, I don't know if there's a more underrated club than Dingho's. And that's a place that was getting written up by the LA Times back in the day because it was such a comedy hotbed too. But it is interesting to see Austin turn into this. Because you were friends with Sam Kinison, I'm curious, did you ever spend any time around Bill Hicks? Because I know they were both pretty tight for a while. And Bill is somebody who is this town is very fond of as one of our own.
Oh, Bill Hicks, he was a brilliant genius. I met Bill when I did Rodney Dangerfield's Nothing Goes Right special. And Rodney had auditioned to everybody. And we were in L.A., and it was the last night. And my brother Mike says, go ask him. So I went up to Rodney. I said, Rodney, I said, I know you've seen a lot of people, but he said, could you take a look at me? He goes, kid, I've seen 1,500 comics. It's all, I'm going. I'm done. I'm all finished with this. And I walked away and he said, hey, if you can be in New York Monday night, I'll take a look at you. And Mike said, we'll be there. So we flew home to Boston, got on a train, went down. And the last two spots were me and Bill Hicks, who was going to get the spot to be on that show. And it was Dice Clay, Carol Leifer, Barry Sobel. So it was an amazing break. And it was a big breakout for me because after that, I started doing movies and TV, and it was. But Hicks, he was one of a kind, man. He was a brilliant comic.
Your film and TV accolades now include Extended Family, which is on NBC on Tuesdays. The show is just now ramping up, and you're receiving rave reviews for your performance. I think the Wall Street Journal compared you to a sort of Cosmo Kramer like character on this show. Just how much fun has it been getting to film Extended Family, Lenny?
You're not going to believe it. First of all, I tell people I'm the second oldest guy on network television, and Tom Selleck's not doing too good. No, I'm kidding. But the fact that I can do a show that involves Tom Werner, who's got like 24 Emmys for network television sitcoms, and Michael Malley, oh, I love that guy. I can't say enough about him. And I'm leaving people out. Wick Grosbeck. I mean, Amelia. It's just there were so many people I want to thank. You know, because I'm grateful. Oh man, I'm so grateful. You know, I mean, to work with John Cryer, Donald Faison, Abigail Spencer, Sofia Coppola, and Finn Sweeney. I mean, this crew. They had already established the cast and they were shooting. And Wick Grosbeck, one of the executive producers, had asked me, he owns the Celtics, years ago, if I'd be willing to do a show. And I said, yes, it's just a phone call away. And Tom Werner said, would you be willing to do a show? I said, of course I want to work with you. And Michael Malley, same thing, but it never happened. And then they called and said they wanted me to come out and shoot a couple shows. So I went out and I shot a show. And I was walking by the green room, and there's my face on a camera. And I hear someone say, this isn't working out. I go, shit, I'm going to get fired. And then I think it was Lionsgate. They said, yeah, it's definitely not working out. I went, oh, man, I'm dead. And they go, we need him in every show. And I went, yeah. So they reshot the pilot and put me in the pilot. And then we shot 13 shows. Two of them were already shot before I was there. So those have been aired. But every show from tonight on, I'm in. So I hope people like it because when Michael O'Malley and NBC and Lionsgate said, Lenny, are you happy? I said, am I happy? I'm like a rescue dog just before we got gassed. Nobody's happier than me. Yes, I love it. Hey, man, I'm old. Who knows how much long I got left?
That's right. So if you're listening right now, you can go home and turn it on NBC tonight, extended family. Lenny, this is the first time that you're appearing on the show is tonight, or you were on the pilot, which aired a few weeks ago as well?
Oh, no. They put me in a pilot, and then I had filmed one show, and the two that I wasn't in, they run back to back. It's really funny. I took my sister, who's in a wheelchair, to Aruba, and we had a big watch party with my family, about 30 of us, and I wasn't on the show. And then I had a watch party with a bunch of buddies of mine, and I wasn't on that show. So I'm in the rest of them. It's kind of embarrassing, but I'm in the rest of the shows.
Are you gonna have a watch party? Are you gonna have a watch party for your appearance tonight, or are you gonna be watching this one alone?
No. I'm gonna watch it alone and hope everyone else sees it, and I hope they like it. But it is such an amazing thing at my age now to be doing a sitcom. You know, because I had my own sitcom 40 years ago. You know, people say, "Do you know who I am? Do you know who I used to be?" I mean, I was a star. I had it all. I mean, I had Lenny lunchboxes. I was all around the world. It was unbelievable. But you know, I've been humbled, and I have just listened. I like making people laugh. I really do. I get a kick out of it.
You've been married for 27 years now, Lenny. Congratulations. I'm on.
I've been married,
and things are going pretty well. What's the key to a long-lasting marriage?
Hand puppets. I tell people I've been happily married 37 years, 5 different women, but I'm no quitter. Actually, I've had like one marriage that cost me a fortune. That was the redheaded Jewish Playboy model cocaine dealer from Birmingham, Alabama. What could go wrong? And then another girl, I think was one of those common law marriage. And now my current wife, which I also refer to as my last wife. I've been with her for 27 years. And the poor girl, I don't know, I tricked her. And we live in an estate in Martha's Vineyard overlooking the ocean, you know? So that's not bad. This is my crash pad, but you know, next time.
What do you love about Martha's Vineyard?
Oh my God. It's where the Kennedys went to murder people, the Clintons went to have sex with people, and Obama's there now, and he just watches.
Oh, my goodness. And considering all the stuff that you put yourself through in life, Lenny, what's the closest that you've ever been to death?
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Dennis Leary says, "I have more lives than a cat." The closest one, well, I had three big ones the last 2 years. I had the massive stroke, which was, oh, you don't want that, man. You don't want a stroke. Oh, God. The stroke, I'm so glad you brought that up because I got to remember to do that in my act. There was the stroke, and they had to do my carotid artery. And then I drove myself to the hospital, which I don't recommend people do. But I had no chance because I was on the vineyard. And if I called 911, I live a mile off a dirt road, off another dirt road with a 250-yard kill range. For those who don't know what a kill range is, come on down. No, if they had missed a turn, they wouldn't have got to me in time. So, and the cops know me down there. So I drove like a madman. I got to the hospital. And then the two heart attacks, the mini heart attack, and then the massive heart attack when I was skiing with cystic fibrosis in American Airlines in Vail about 18 months ago. So yeah, that was pretty wild. And other than that, I've had a couple of close, maybe drug-related deaths, but you know, and then it was an alcohol poison. Yeah, there's a few of them. I mean, listen, I'm playing with health money. I am a miracle of modern science. I do more drugs now than I did when I was an addict. And none of them get me high, but they keep me alive. And the sad part, Trey, I forget to take them. You know what I mean? It's just one of the pill boxes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's just one. I got another one. And I got to take all these or I die, you know?
Oh man, considering that you're somebody who already had a very sunny, positive disposition, did it change your mentality, or is there any shift in perspective as a result of these close calls?
No, you know why? Because when I was in the hospital, I actually thought I was gone. The last two big, the stroke and the big heart attack, I made my peace with God in the bed. I go, wow. I go, hey man, if my number's up, okay. I've had a nice run, and thank you for everything. I said, I mean, I don't want to go, but I mean, if you think there's a lot of funnier guys than me, if you need a comedian up there. But yeah, I mean, listen, I'm like Frank Sinatra. I live every day like my last one, because one of these days I'm going to be right. You know, so I just try to enjoy life, and try to make people happy. And, you know, I have a very short list of people that I don't care for. And most times I don't remember who they are anyway. So it's all right.
Well, that short list includes some people that you're going to have to deal with this weekend, because one of your pet peeves is annoying people on airplanes. Is there one particular behavior or habit that annoys you more than others on the airplanes? Because I'm with you here. Airplanes are rife for material, of course, but also rife for people who have zero courtesy around others.
Right there. That's it. Zero courtesy. I flew, you know, Trey, I was so blessed because I got to fly during the heyday of air travel. I used to go on. Matter of fact, there was a woman. I flew back and forth from Los Angeles to Boston every weekend for 18 months because I was making a ton of money in Boston, and I was trying to break in at the store. No one was helping me out, and no one was getting me in. And then Mitzi finally made me a regular. But I'd work every week. I'd work every week, every week, every week. And she ended up being really great to me. I love Mitzi. But there was a woman in Boston. She's passed now. She said, Lenny, if you get a suit, I'll put you in first class. So I bought a suit the next week. And I wore a suit every week. I was a big fat guy too at the time. I mean, I was like 350 at the time. And I would wear that suit, and they'd bump me up to first class. And there'd be lobster tails and fine wines and champagnes and meals from Michelin stars, chefs. And now it's like getting on a bus. All right, get on a bus. Get the bag. Grab on to something. Let's go. And then the people that are rude to handicapped people, they have no respect for people in a wheelchair. They're throwing their luggage around. I mean, it's horrible. I mean, it's so funny, Trey. I was on a flight the other day, and this young kid came by. You're a big, big, strapping young kid. And I was struggling with my bag. He goes, let me get that for you, sir. And he put it up top. You know, young kid. I still move around pretty good for my age. And I said, that was very kind of you. If we crash into a mountain range, I'll eat you last. The kid walked away going, wow, that guy's out of his mind.
Do you remember what it was like when Mitzi passed you at the Comedy Store? Because I've heard other comedians talk about just how pivotal a moment that was for them in their lives.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I was working. I was working for, and she liked me. She liked me as a person. She's, you know, I really like you. But I you know, you're too much like Leno, you know, Joe. And people laugh, and I go, geez, isn't that what was supposed to do? You know, I didn't say it, but I'm saying that's what we're supposed to do. And I remember she started working me in Vegas, and it is before she told me I was passed. And I remember she got a red napkin off a table and stuck it in my suit coat, you know, and says, yeah, wear that. And I go, yeah. But when she passed me, she says, you're now a regular at the store. And I says, what does that mean? She says, you get paid. I said, oh, that's great. Oh, that's so exciting. And then I said to somebody, I said, what do I get paid? And they go, you're paying like 20 bucks. I go, 20 bucks? I would pay for my stamps. So I still had to fly coast to coast. Then I worked the main room, and that'd be a couple hundred bucks maybe. And then I worked her place down in La Jolla, you know, and then I'd work. She'd bring me to Vegas a lot. And I owe Mitzi an awful lot because she was really, she made me better because she made me, you know, struggle. I mean, I just didn't walk in there off the street and said, hey, you know, you look at you, you're great. I worked my ass off just to one, to please her, and two, to be good, you know, because I mean, there were great comedians when I was there, great comedians.
All right, last question now, Lenny. What do you love about doing stand-up comedy all these years later?
Oh, well, the fact that I scratched out a career. You know, like I say, it all started as a joke. And I mean, had I had any other talent, I would have been like an iron worker or an electrician or a plumber or a cop or a fireman, you know, like most of the people I grew up with. But I couldn't do anything else, you know. And everywhere I went, people said, "Geez, you're so funny." And I go, "Yeah, but the big thing was I wasn't trying to be funny. I'm nuts, you know." And by taking that and being able to eke out a career, I mean, I've been at the top, I've been at the bottom, you know. Listen, I'm just glad to still be working today, and if I make people laugh, that makes me happy.
I have no doubt you're going to make people laugh at the Comedy Mothership this weekend. Going to be performing Friday through Sunday. There are still a few tickets remaining for the late shows on Friday and Saturday, and a few left for that 8 p.m. show on Sunday. Those will be gone in the next couple of days. So go now to comedymothership.com to snag those and check Lenny out tonight. Tuesdays, NBC, Extended Family is the name of the show. Lenny has been getting rave reviews for his performance, even as the second oldest guy in TV. Screw Tom Selleck. Lenny Clark's the man. Lenny, man, real pleasure.
Hey,
thank you so much for the time today.
Trey, I can't thank you. This has been a blast. Are you going to be able to swing by this weekend?
I do not have tickets, but I may be buying tickets now.
Hey, I'll buy you a ticket. I'll buy you a ticket. Come on, you're helping me, you're helping the club. You deserve to be there. You're Trey. Wake up. What are you new? Come on, you can come with me.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. Thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. We'll talk to you next time, Books on Pod.